Hello everyone, this is Darren Duff, coming to you from Savannah, Georgia, where me and my new bride, we actually got married last Saturday, which was November 12th, are taking our honeymoon, and her name is Kimberly, and actually later on in one of the future episodes of Blind Cool Tech, we are going to, Larry, you'll be happy to note that we are going to submit a podcast discussion on what it's like to be a totally blind married couple. I figured we'd wait a few weeks, not only so that things settle down, but also so that we can... have some experience to talk about, since we only got married not even a week ago. Sorry about the wind noise. I'm actually outside cleaning up some stuff out here. This place we're staying at is really, really nice. And I'll give you a little background on that in a little bit. But this sound seeing tour that I have submitted here on Blind Cool Tech is a haunted Savannah tour. So this is a tour of some of the places in Savannah that are haunted. What we actually did was we got in a modified hearse that had been modified to seat 8 people. It was a real hearse. The driver, somewhere in the tour, tells you how long that hearse has been in business. So we get in this hearse, and there were 8 of us. Actually, there were 9 of us because I had my guide dog, Kenya, along with us for the ride. And it was actually quite fun. We drove through... 9 of the 24 squares in Savannah, and we actually drove past some places that were haunted, and some of it's pretty morbid, pretty scary. So if you are younger, or if you have children that are younger that are going to be listening to this podcast, discretion is advised. I mean, I guess it just depends on how active of imagination you have. But anyway, it's really cool. And let me tell you a little bit about, unrelated to the tour, which is coming up in just a second here. I want to tell you about this place we're staying at. You can actually check it out. You have to have some sighted assistance to check it out. But you can check it out on the internet. The website is creek-house.com. That's creek-house.com. The Creek House that we're staying at is actually in Savannah, Georgia. Actually, I think we're closer to Tybee Island than we are downtown Savannah. The place has a 3.5-acre backyard. It's a 3-story house, 4-bathroom, 4-bedroom, 4-bathroom, kitchen, dining area, laundry room, all kinds of stuff. It's got a 2-story deck on the back of it. Really nice. We've been going out every night doing different things. We actually ate at the, tonight we're going out to eat at the Pirate House, which is a really good seafood restaurant here, in Savannah. And it actually is haunted by one of the, a ghost, the ghost of, what was the pirate's name? I can't think of the guy's name. Really famous pirate. It wasn't Blackbeard, it was somebody else. Captain Flint, that's who it was. And actually that's one of the places that we pass on the sound seeing tour, so you'll actually hear the driver talk about that briefly. So I'm stepping back inside here, and we're going to get started with the sound seeing tour. If you want to, I'll go ahead and tell you, if you want to email me with suggestions on the sound seeing tour, you can email me at dduff, that's D-D-U-F-F, at hyperband.com, hyperband.com. And actually, I will tell you one last thing before I start the tour. I'm actually using the Olympus WS-200S to record this introduction, and it's also what I use to record the sound seeing tour. I don't have any external amplified binaural mic, so I'm using the ones that are built into the Olympus. So I hope this tour turns out good. It has been edited briefly before posting, so anyway, I'm going to stop jabbing and let you guys enjoy the tour. Any compliments, any suggestions, criticism, whatever, feel free to send it my way. Okay, guys, enjoy the tour. Thanks. Okay, come on, Ken. We went too far, buddy. All right.
We need to investigate.
We just went too far. He didn't notice you guys stopped back there. He's having a good time walking after being cooped up for 3-4 days. He's ready to walk a little bit. And I was just following him, assuming that you guys had went on down. No, don't be. It's actually, he did really good with that crossing back there. So it's totally okay.
Okay,
so we're just waiting here, huh?
Yeah.
Alright, do we pay up front or?
I think so.
Okay.
Run down and it's $14 a person.
Okay.
That's alright.
Hey. Well, no, but that's fine.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's alright.
So it'll be about 30.
Yep, I got it covered.
You got it?
Yeah, I got it. Okay. Are we like right here or?
Okay, well he's waiting, so
okay.
We'll just go ahead and go to him.
Alright.
So do I take your elbow?
That works. Like a plan.
So where are we going to?
We're going in this direction.
This direction. Alright. But moving right along down the sidewalk. Come on, Ken. Oh, good boy. Alright. Oh, you guys are making a run.
Yeah.
Come on, Ken. Come on, Kurt. Come on. Yeah.
Come on.
The
sidewalk.
Oh, okay.
That's like a little quirk.
Oh, okay, cool. Come on, buddy. Taking me around something here. Ken. Doing good. Can ya? Come on, bud. Hold up. Hey, settle down. Settle down. That's our ride, I guess. Back, buddy. Come on.
Are we allowed to pet your dog?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, he's working right now, so I'd appreciate it if you didn't.
Okay.
Thanks.
Can we talk to him or anything?
No, try not.
Really a working dog. Okay.
Yeah, try not to talk to him. It distracts him from his work.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I need you man to go on.
Uh-oh, look out now. He'd probably do better in the back, probably like at my feet or something.
Okay.
Right. So I should probably sit in the back just a little bit more room back.
All right, great.
In the back, over the back.
Great.
So if everyone's right, we can kind of go ahead and
let's
get a little
bit
of get going.
Okay. All right. Can you follow? Follow, bud. Follow our crowd. Come on. Ken. He's just excited. Feet, leave it. He's a little excited here. Hey. That's what we're going in, bud, alright? He's sniffing the hearse. Alright.
Two large steps.
Okay.
So, is Ken going to jump in first?
No, he'll come in behind me. So, hang on. No, back, bud. I'm getting in first. Come on. Rest. Rest.
All right. Let's see. Is there a rail?
Here's the rail.
Okay.
Once.
It might be a little tough for him to get in. But... Hey, come on, buddy. Come on, big guy. Which way am I going here?
Right here?
Okay. Sure. Come here, bud. Come on, come on, come on. Stop sniffing. Stop sniffing.
Okay.
Down.
All right, let me go.
Let me make sure his tail's in. Can you calm down? Calm down, big guy. Now, is that going to close back there or anything?
Yeah,
is it going to close like right at his rear end? Or?
No, I'm just about a foot and a half back.
Oh, okay. Tuck tail, bud. Come on. Tuck tail, man. I know you're excited. Never been in a hearse before, neither have I.
What
happened? Settle down there, buddy. Settle down there.
Jack,
good boy.
Does he teach classes tonight? Does Bill teach classes tonight? Oh, he told the city needs my driver's license. Just give it to you and you can give it to him.
Okay. No.
Take long steps.
There you go.
It's K05-27193.
I'll bring this back, buddy. Situated here. All right. Good to go.
I wanted to, but I didn't want to talk to him, so I didn't
know. Tell him to?
Yeah, he left a message. I didn't talk to him.
All right.
So just stay,
oh, stay there, bud. Stay there. Stay there. You need to get between here?
Yeah, I'll step.
It's going to be kind of crazy. Oh, he's going to worm his way.
Words,
hey, buddy.
I won't talk to him.
He's turned around facing back right now.
No, that's okay.
Bud, you're in a bad position here.
So you still got plenty of room back here.
Watch your nose.
Watch your nose. Jeez. Down, Kenya. He is so excited.
Evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Evening. Nathan. I'm your guide throughout a lovely city this evening.
All right.
Well, we're just going to go on the
count of three.
I want to hear all eight of you back, nine of you back here. Unleash your best blood-curdling scream, all right?
Uh-oh.
All right, one.
Watch the dog.
Two.
193.
Three!
Is that
good? Weak! Blood curdling, folks. Let's try this one more time.
All right.
One, two, three!
Ah!
That was a little bit better. Well, two reasons I asked for a good scream. Number one, to get everyone good and loosened up. I don't like stiff, quiet people in the back of my hearse. And number two, as you're driving down River Street.
Okay, man, that was a bad joke.
Either their backs turned to us or they're just not paying attention. I'm going to count one, two, three, and we're all going to unleash a scream on them and scare them half to death. Yeah. Spewing out the nose. Does anybody have any burning questions before we get going?
How good are your descriptions of your, you know, your places where you stop at and such?
I'll see what I can do.
Great, man. If you want some real excitement, I could drive.
Okay.
Just offering.
You got enough room?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine.
Okay.
Sorry about pushing on the back of your chair there.
It's not at all. It doesn't go any place.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have...
Alright.
Alright.
This ought to be pretty cool. Here we go. I didn't know they were open like this.
Well, they do them at night, you know, for the effect.
Yeah, but I mean, I didn't know hearses were like all open.
Oh,
I figured
no,
they were.
They modified the
form. Oh, okay. I was like, wait a minute, aren't they supposed to be closed in or something, man?
There's a veritable monitor.
Lay down. Lay down. Lay down. Nice.
Can everybody hear me all right back there?
Yes, we can.
All right, well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you all to beautiful, historic Savannah, Georgia this evening. However, more importantly, I'd like to welcome you to Hearst Tour. My name is Nathan, like I said, and I'll be your guide throughout our lovely city this evening. We're all currently riding in the back of a 1984 Cadillac Hearst.
Hey.
And this car was in use in one of our local mortuaries for 11 years, and then was sold to the Chatham County Coroner, who used it for an additional 3 years to shuttle bodies back and forth to the county morgue.
Great.
During this car's illustrious career, they carried just over 2,700 bodies to their final destination.
Hey,
so you two in those very back two seats back there?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're where the head would have been. Or where the feet would have been, and those you in the middle, well, you just use your imagination. Well, there are a few theories as to why Savannah has been rated for the last 10 years running as the most haunted city in America by the American Paranormal Association. Now, many believe it has something to do with it being the founding place of the 13th of the original 13 colonies, making it a rather unlucky place in and of itself. If you believe it's heartache and pain which causes spirits to come back and be disgruntled, well, there's plenty of that around here. We were captured during two major wars. We had three great fires, which leveled at least half the city each time. We had two yellow fever epidemics, which killed at least two-thirds of the population each time. We've had voodoo, we've had slavery, we've had serial killers, we've had pirates, we've had Girl Scouts. It also might have something to do with the estimated 40,000 dead bodies which currently lie underneath Savannah, Georgia. That doesn't count any remaining cemeteries. Those are only the bodies underneath the streets, sidewalks, and buildings.
Really?
We're currently driving down River Street, the first street ever here in Savannah. This was originally the passageway between the port over on the left and the warehouses on the right. Now it's where the locals and tourists alike come to, shall we say, commune with the spirits a little bit. I am required to do one quick commercial here. There are four restaurants down here which do sponsor us, being the Conk House, Fiddler's Crab House, Tubby's, and Spanky's. Good food, go eat there, and I promise that's the last commercial you're going to hear on my tour. Now, are any of you familiar with an old song called Moon River?
Yeah.
Big hit for Frank Sinatra, Henry Mancini, just about everyone else who ever recorded it. Well, coming up over here on our right, there's a large building which is set in a little bit and has balconies on the side. It was there that Johnny Mercer, who was a famous songwriter from here in Savannah, was staying when he wrote that song about the beautiful Savannah River across the street. He was also staying there when he wrote the Frank Sinatra classic, That Old Black Magic. He was doing a lot of composing in that hotel. Now he's down to Bonaventure Cemetery, where he's doing a lot of decomposing. Now let's see if we can't get a scare out of some of these people coming up here on the right. You must have one from way down deep, folks. And one, two, three. A couple of worried looks up there. I see drunk people. One more reason good when we get up here underneath the high. There's echo under here that sounds amazing. And you got eight people screaming under here.
Cool.
Let's sneak up here by these people by the 18.
Lay down.
God, I love my job. Give me a one, two, and
three. Nice. Reverb effect.
As we emerge from underneath the height, if you look over to the left, across the Savannah River and past those riverboats, you will see Hutchinson Island. That's where the Savannah Trade and Convention Center and the Westin Hotel now stand. However, back when Georgia was first founded, that was the main prison island. Anytime anyone was sentenced to exile, one of the more popular sentences handed down at that time, you were sent to that island to just live off the land until you eventually met the end of your days. If you're caught trying to swim back to the mainland, the guards stationed along the bluff were fully authorized to simply shoot you dead in the water. Almost 500 people were executed that way in the waters beside River Street during that island's use as a prison. Over to our right, there's a bar called The Warehouse. That bar is haunted by me every night afterwards. Drive down River Street, you'll notice it's kind of bumpy and rather uneven. That's because it's paved with ballast stones. Now, ballast stones are stones that ships used to carry over when they had no cargo, so they could equalize their weight so they didn't capsize on the voyage to Savannah. But when they got here, they no longer needed these stones, so they dumped them on the side of the bluff. One, two, three. Yeah, gotta give them what they want. Now, back when Savannah was first being built, there's an enterprising young contractor who saw these stones. See more drunk people. Saw these stones, realized he wouldn't have to pay for them, so he offered the city board of Savannah to pave the road with these stones. Well, they paid quite a large sum of money to do so. And then about a year later, the citizens of Savannah were petitioning the board to do something about this road. They said that these jagged stones were breaking their horseshoes and wagon wheels. So they paid this man a second time to pull all the stones right back up off the road. And about 6 months later, the citizens of Savannah, apparently are never satisfied with anything and just really enjoy complaining, were petitioning the board again because this time their horses and buggies were getting stuck in the mud. So they paid the same man the same price a third time to put the exact same stones right back on the exact same road. Even back then, our tax dollars were being spent quite wisely. Now, the stretch of buildings on our right, which runs the entire length of River Street, these are the oldest buildings here in Savannah. And that's also where they used to house slaves when they first took them off the boat, as they were also cotton warehouses. And the spirits of these slaves are often said to wander about these buildings, quite often causing quite a bit of a disturbance for the people who work there and the people who visit there. Wow. And the most haunted of these slave spots is said to be coming up over here on our right. Now, it's that building with the red and white striped awnings, which is now the Shrimp Factory restaurant. However, that was originally the quarantine ward, but they used to house sick slaves who had various diseases. They didn't spread them to the rest of the slaves here in the warehouses. They would often lie in that room, receiving no medical attention for months on end until they eventually died. Now, it's said that these days in that room, you can still hear the moans, groans, screams, and wails of these slaves, destined to relive their torment throughout all eternity. And that room is now the liquor locker of the Shrimp Factory, and the employees there actually draw straws at the end of the night to see who has to go into this haunted room to restock the bar.
Oh, wow.
I've spoken to the owner on a couple of occasions. He says that the spirits tend to be a bit of a nuisance, as after their first encounters, many employees don't stick around very long. However, he says he's glad the spirits are there. Says the only bar on River Street, which at no point in its history has ever had to fire an employee for stealing their alcohol. Over here on the right, let's get one more good one before we get off River Street. One, two, three. Try to get all the good ones down here because we can't do that in the store district. That's a $1,000 fine for disturbing the peace.
Oh, dear.
Although you can't really do much to disturb the peace.
I didn't bring that much money, man.
Over here on our right also is the Old Harbor Inn. The Old Harbor Inn originally was gutted by a fire in 1880 to set by a man named Henry Tate. Now, Henry Tate was a disgruntled former worker who had been fired for harassing the female clientele. Now, seven people died in that fire, including Henry Tate, who was smart enough to set the fire, but not smart enough to get out of the building in time. They still said to wander about that place harassing the female clientele. They took my tour last summer. Said that back in the early 80s, she had stayed there for four nights all alone. But at the end of every night, when she crawled into bed, she always feel a ghostly presence crawling into bed beside her.
Yeah.
Over to our left is the statue of Florence Martis, a.k.a. the Waving Girl. A little five-year-old girl on the tour about a month ago asked me why she was beating that dog with a metal towel. And no, it's not exactly what's going on there, man. Now, she was the lighthouse keeper's daughter on River Street. Then, beginning at the age of 19, for 44 years, she waved at every single ship which entered the harbor. She even trained that dog to wake her up so she could wave at the ships approaching at night. Now, there were many theories as to why Flo exhibited this rather odd behavior, aside from the fact she just really didn't have much of a life. Many people said that she was waved to a lost love who had sailed away one day, and she was always watching for his return. Well, she said this is not the case, she just enjoyed being friendly. Now, many citizens of Savannah believed she was trying to be a little bit too friendly and actually flag down some business. They drew another nickname here in Savannah, the considerably less flattering Red Light Girl. Over to our left, in the corner of the stone wall, behind it, where the staircase is, there was once the entrance to a tunnel which led to the Pirate's House, which I'll drive us by in just a couple of minutes. Now, back when the pirates were having trouble finding willing crew members for their ships, they would often shanghai young men through those tunnels, which meant that they would get you good and liquored up at the bar. Then when you passed out, they'd drag you through that tunnel and load you aboard their pirate ship. They'd wake up a good 3 or 4 miles out to sea. Only two choices, you could either swap that deck or take yourself an awful long swim back to shore. Now, before the European settlers came here in 1733 and built the River Street Landing, which is now on our right, Bay Street, over to our left, was the highest point on the bluff. Therefore, this is where the Native Americans, who lived here for about 3,000 years before the Europeans showed up, decided to have their burial ground. It's estimated by modern historians that somewhere between 9 and 11,000 of these Native Americans currently lie underneath Bay Street alone. And when the European settlers got here, in an unprecedented show of respect for the local culture, they paved over their cemetery and built a road. That's definitely not very nice of them. Unfortunately, we're in the only hearse in the city which doesn't actually get to go through red lights, so we'll be good going here in just a second, folks. I don't know, I got 9 bodies. That's why I have 10 bodies.
A little bit of an emergency here.
As we cross the street, do keep in mind we are driving on top of an old Indian burial ground. I don't know about you, but I feel like horror movies know that's not a good
idea.
That's right. Here on our left is the historic Mulberry Inn. This was originally the John Wesley Hotel, and then it became a Coca-Cola bottling plant. Now, back when they were remodeling it to turn it into this hotel, there was a young boy who used to stand outside every day, bouncing a red rubber ball and watching the workers. Now, one fateful day, one of these workers knocked a pile of bricks off the roof and crushed this young boy. He's been inside the hotel many times since then. People say they see a rather sad, lost-looking young man wandering throughout the hallways with a red rubber ball. However, if they approach him and ask him if he's lost or offer to help him find his parents, he will not answer them. He'll merely turn around and disappear through one of the walls. Over here to our left, this large grassy area is Washington Square. Now, Washington Square was the site of the Great Savannah Bonfires, where every year until 1900, on New Year's Eve, all the citizens of Savannah would bring their Christmas trees to be burned. They had a huge party around this bonfire, which often raged higher than the rooftops of the buildings surrounding the square. 1900 was the last year they had one of these parties, because that year there was a 19-year-old woman who was killed in the blaze. The official story is that she got a little bit too tipsy and stumbled into the fire. However, most people believe she was pushed in by a jilted lover. Amongst the drunken revelers here in Savannah on New Year's Eve, oftentimes standing throughout the square, you'll see paranormal enthusiasts and ghost hunters. It's because that lady is said to make an appearance in the center of the square every year, clad in her trademark white party dress right around the stroke of midnight, ready to rejoin the New Year's festivities. Now, across the street, and slightly to the left, it'll be on our right once we make the turn, is the oldest wooden structure in the state of Georgia.
Oh, wow.
That is the Pirate's House. It was built in 1754, making that building older than the United States of America itself.
Wow.
It was originally built as an inn and tavern for pirates, where they could rest their weary sea legs and get a little much-needed R&R. Many of the more famous pirates who stayed there include Blackbeard, and named Captain Blood, who's credited with being the first pirate to fly the Jolly Roger, which is the skull and crossbones flag, and a man by the name of Captain Flint. Have any of you back there ever read the classic novel Treasure Island?
Yes.
Or maybe the Cliff Notes?
Yes.
I don't think you'll recognize Captain Flint. Robert Louis Stevenson, who wrote that novel, dropped in on this place during a holdover on a voyage to Samoa. He was so impressed with the place, they made a location in his book and based his main character on a man he met here by the name of Captain Flint.
Uh-huh.
Now, Captain Flint had the reputation of being quite the bloodthirsty pirate. He actually did have a hook replacing a hand he had lost in battle. And he was also infamous for his thirst for rum. He died in that building, and his last words are reported to have been screaming at the bartender for more rum. They say these days, if you order rum in that restaurant and turn your back on your glass, there's a good chance your rum will disappear. And many say this is the spirit of Captain Flint, still roaming those halls, rum-thirsty and bloodthirsty as ever. Although, in all fairness, disappearing rum just might be an indication that I'm hanging out there that evening. A man by the name of Sandy used to run that place, ran it for 6 years. And during the years he ran it, he offered a challenge of $1,000, 500 to you and 500 to your favorite charity.
Nice.
If you could stay in a certain upstairs room from sundown to sunup, completely alone, in total darkness. During the years he offered this challenge, almost 300 people took him up on it, and only 7 ever made it to the end of the night to collect their money.
Oh, wow.
But the next building I'm going to point out to you goes by the nickname the Amityville of the South. It's been featured on History's Mysteries on the History Channel, and is considered by most to be the most haunted structure in the city of Savannah. That's coming up on our left. It's a 3-story clapboard house with a widow's walk balcony on top between twin chimneys and the American flag on the front porch. Now, this place is known as the Hampton Lillibridge House. The Hampton family, who originally lived here, were all murdered on the top floor with an axe by one of their workers shortly after the building's completion. Then, in the early 1950s, it was bought by Jim Williams, main character from Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, who moved it to its present location. On the first day of the move, 13 of his workers died when a wall collapsed, and 17 more died throughout the move of various unexplained causes. When they were digging out the foundation, they unearthed an old family crypt containing 8 bodies. One of these was the remains of a man Jim dubbed the Tall Man. Now, Jim says this spirit used to wander around his bedside in the night, chanting his name. Now, this so unnerved Jim, that house decided the only official exorcism ever to be performed in the state of Georgia. Now, the exorcism didn't take, and the ghost returned about 10 days later for 2 reasons. Number 1, Jim had an Episcopal priest perform a Catholic ceremony. And number 2, exorcisms are always supposed to be based solely upon spiritual need and not financial gain. And Jim paid that priest quite handsomely for his services. And that house originally stood across the square, which is coming up to our left, where you see that parking deck now. We're currently rounding Warren Square. During the early days of Savannah, its nickname was Red Square, as this was one of Savannah's original two execution squares. Mm. Now, the other execution square, which we'll see later on in the tour, was where the hangings took place. Therefore, this was dubbed Red Square because the grounds in the center were often stained blood red, because this square was designated for the beheadings. It was said to be haunted by the spirits of two slaves who escaped their chains on River Street back in the early 1800s and were caught running through the city. Well, when these two men were captured, instead of taking them back to the river, they decided to make an example of them and use them as a deterrent for any other slaves trying to escape. So they brought them here to Red Square, laid them across a couple old tabby stone slabs in the center, and simply lopped the two men's heads off. Well, said that their spirits still inhabit the square, as do the spirits of many of those executed here. And they say late at night, if you stare long and hard enough into the darkened center of that square, sometimes you can make out the specters of floating disembodied heads. Well, it's said by those lucky enough to catch a glimpse of these heads, that if you look closely, you'll see that their lips are moving. Well, they say if you get a little bit closer, it almost appears like the heads are singing. They say if you are brave, drunk, or stupid enough to get a little bit closer, sometimes you can make out the song that they sing. Yes, it said these floating, severed heads sing, I ain't got nobody. Oh. Yeah, I warn you, the joke's only get worse from here, folks.
Oh, man.
At any point in the tour, if anyone has any questions, do feel free to go ahead and yell up here. That's why this window between us is open, so I can hear all of your questions and everything you say about me back there. We're going to have a more interactive style tour. You don't just got to sit there and listen to the wonderful sounds of my voice all evening. As you round Columbia Square here, if you look over to our right, you'll see a three-story red brick building with white trim that is known as the Kehoe House. It was built for William Kehoe, who was an early Irish immigrant to the city and had twin daughters who disappeared one day during a game of hide-and-seek. Well, these girls' whereabouts were unknown for quite some time. However, a couple of weeks later, they did notice a foul stench emanating from one of the chimneys in the house. And Mrs. Kehoe is rather mentally unstable and couldn't bear the thought that this might be her two little girls. So she simply had the chimney bricked up and the girls' remains reported as missing. When the new owners of the Kehoe House took over once the family had left, they opened up that chimney where they discovered these skeletal remains of these two little girls who had apparently suffocated while playing hide-and-seek. The new owners of the Kehoe House turned it into a funeral home, and this building was a funeral home for about 120 years before it became this beautiful bed and breakfast. Now, these days, if you stay in rooms 201 or 203, management will make you sign a waiver. Now, this waiver states that if you get scared off in the middle of the night or leave for any reason, you're still responsible for paying for the rest of your stay. As for 201 and 203 were the viewing rooms, and all the rooms most often vacated in the middle of the night, because people say they wake up to see ghostly figures staring down at them in their beds, as if they are the ones at their final viewing. Now, the room in the basement, which was the embalming room during its days as a funeral home, is now the kitchen. So if the food tastes a little funny in the Kehoe House, it might just be the preservatives. If you got scared off in that place, you can always stay over here to our left, in the historic 1790 Inn. This place was built around 1790. There's said to be two spirits in this place. There's a servant in the tavern, and the top floor is inhabited by the ghost of Anna Powers. Now, Anna fell in love with a sailor while he was here in Savannah, and she got herself just a little bit knocked up. Now, they took up residence in that top floor in room 301, but before they could be married, her sailor felt the call of the sea just a little bit too loudly, and decided to ship back out. Now, she stood in that upstairs window, watching his ship disappear over the horizon. She was so brokenhearted that she threw herself out the window and plunged three stories to her death on the cobblestones below. Uh-huh. She's still said to inhabit that top floor. Room 301 is the most haunted, and coincidentally the most requested room in the hotel. It's actually a two-month waiting list to get that room. Wow. It's said that she likes to steal wedding and engagement rings from the people who stay there to make up the ones which she never got the opportunity to wear with her beloved lost sailor. And over to our left is Oglethorpe Square, named for General James Oglethorpe. Uh-huh. He's a man who founded the colony of Georgia in 1733 when he sailed here with 114 original colonists. If you look into the trees throughout this square, dangling from the branches, you'll see a grayish-green plant, which is pretty prevalent here throughout Savannah. That's known as Spanish moss. Now, Spanish moss did not come from Spain, and it's actually not moss either. It's an airborne plant, which is in the pineapple family. You don't want to mess with it, however, since it's full of ticks, mites, and little red bugs called chiggers. Like to burrow under your skin and make life rather uncomfortable. You ever heard the expression, don't let the bed bugs bite? Well, that expression comes from the days when they used to stuff mattresses with Spanish moss.
Lovely.
Spanish moss is also the reason for the first automobile recall ever in American history. So at one point, the Ford company decided to stuff their seats with it, especially the discomfort of the drivers and their more sensitive areas. When the Hollywood types came to Savannah to film the movie Forrest Gump, someone in the crew had the bright idea to have a Spanish Moss party and got the costume department to whip him and the rest of the crew up some costumes made completely out of Spanish Moss.
Oh, no.
It was obviously a very bad idea.
Oh, no.
And actually ended up delaying shooting of that film for nearly a month. But coming up to our left, it would be Wright Square. If you look into the far corner of the square, you'll see the top of a large granite boulder. Now that is the final resting place of Tamachichi. Now Tamachichi was the Miko, or chief, of the Omicron Indians. We greeted Okafor when he first came here to Savannah, and all those 114 survived their first winter. He was originally buried in the center of the square, until 1860 when they moved his body to make way for the monument to William Gordon, founder of the Georgia Railroad. They just took Tom Chichi's rotting corpse out of the ground, tossed him in the corner, and dumped a big rock on top of him. A very nice way to be buried. Oftentimes as you pass by the square, you'll see people walking in circles around that stone. That's because there's a very, very old story here in Savannah. It's actually very popular with the Girl Scouts for some reason they can't explain. Long-time locals have told me that their parents and grandparents used to tell it to them when they were children. Also found it in books dating back to the early 1900s. It says that if you walk around that stone three times, chanting his name, Tamachichi. Tamachichi. Yeah, exactly like that. And then you put your ear up to the stone.
I know.
And listen very carefully. But you can hear Tamachichi say, nothing. I told that story one day last summer on the tour. I had an incredibly drunk lady in the back of the horse who decided she wanted to try it. Well, I let her out figuring, okay, this will at least be entertaining for the rest of us. Well, she stumbled around that stone about 2.5 times before she staggered and fell and cracked her head open on the rock. We had to wait for an ambulance before continuing the tour, and this is why I no longer allow anyone out of the hearse to try it.
Oh, my God.
Now, we're about to encounter one of my personal favorite haunts on the tour. We have two options at this point. Number one, I can drive us by 12 of us to Oglethorpe and tell us a story. Or number two, I ask because I'm not sure how much of a problem it will be to get in and out on this tour. We could stop and go stand by the building, maybe gaze in the windows, and I could tell you the story there. So, general consensus, do we want to stop and check it out, or we want to keep going?
Flip a coin.
I don't care.
We don't care.
All right, if you don't care, we'll just keep driving.
Okay.
Now, there's an interesting feature. Actually, I'll get to that house in just a second. There's an interesting feature of the ground we're currently driving on top of. Actually, you know what? Since you're not stopping, I'm going to do something a little bit different. Back there on the corner, did you see that house with the reddish maroon shutters? Back there. On the corner back there.
Not really, but I'll take your word for it.
I'll point out again as we get past it. That is the first house ever in the Savannah area to be listed in the National Registry of Historic Places. Back there in 1860 on Halloween night, a woman by the name of Juliet was born. Well, then in 1912, Juliet went on to form a cult.
Oh, no.
In this cult, everyone is required to wear the same thing. Members of this cult often make pilgrimages here to Savannah to pay homage at the birthplace of their founder. Men are not allowed to join this cult, and this cult finances their activities by selling highly addictive substances to the American public. The most addictive of these substances are known as Thin Mints. This cult is known as the Girl Scouts of America, founded back in 1912 by Juliet Gordon Lowe, and that house is her birthplace, and as I said, it was the first of the buildings here in Savannah to be listed in the National Registry of Historic Places. We're currently rounding Telfair Square. This is named for Mary and Margaret Telfair, who were two early predominant Savannah residents, who were quite the philanthropists. They did quite a bit of civic work for the city. Also very, very rich and very, very eccentric. Now, Mary was the last of the Telfair family to die. She had never married, nor had she had any children. So, in her will, she left her entire fortune to the city of Savannah. Now, this included quite a few buildings here in the city, which are currently used for various civic purposes. And in my personal opinion, the most beautiful of the buildings she left us will be coming up here over on the right. This is that building with the large Roman-style columns on the porch with the statuary out front.
I haven't even seen that building.
Now, this was originally the Telfair Family Mansion, and is now the Telfair Academy of Arts and Sciences Museum. Now, Mary, when she left this Beacon Museum, also left quite a few rules as to its use. There was to be no eating, drinking, smoking, music, singing, dancing, or loud and boisterous behavior inside her building.
Jeez.
In other words, no partying at all, which of course did not sit well with the citizens of this town. There was also a portrait of Mary, which hung on the back wall, which she said was never, ever to be moved. Well, back in 1981, they repainted the interiors of that place. and two of the workers took that portrait off the wall, and a chunk of the ceiling promptly caved in and killed them both. Now, since that day, Mary has hung precisely where she said she wanted to be.
Whoa.
Now, you may not believe in ghosts or any of this other supernatural mumbo-jumbo I'm going to lay on you throughout the tour, but just to let you know how much many of the citizens of Savannah believe, every year when the Telfair Arts Society has their fundraising banquet, they shell out a small fortune to rent the square to the left when they can just have the party in that building for free. Mary Telfair has been dead for nearly 200 years, and the citizens of Savannah are still afraid to take that woman off. Now, the buildings we're about to drive between, which look rather out of place here in the historic district of Savannah, and they're really ugly. These are the federal buildings. Now, the federal government is the only group allowed to build a new building in the historic district of Savannah without putting a historic-style facade on it. Now, there are many architectural styles employed here throughout the city, representing many artistic periods. I personally refer to this one as the gas station restroom style. It's like it was entirely done in cheap bathroom tile. Again, tax dollars being spent quite wisely. As we turn here onto Whitaker Street, we're going to be driving on top of the original cemetery of the city. See, Savannah was originally much smaller. There were only 4 squares as opposed to the 24 it would eventually grow to.
Wow.
And this is the area on the outskirts of town where they had the burial ground. It's estimated that during this area's use as a burial ground, about 20,000 people were buried here. Well, when the city first began to expand, they moved all the headstones, actually gave back to the families of people buried here, but they left all the bodies and just paved over them and kept going. Which means all 20,000 of them currently lie underneath the streets, sidewalks, and buildings in this area. Now, a geological research team came here from the University of Georgia about 5 years ago and took a soil sample from this area and the area down on River Street. Well, when they analyzed the soil, they discovered that the makeup of the ground here in Savannah contains somewhere between 2 and 6% human bone matter. So just think, every step you've taken to those areas, you stepped on the remains of 3 or 4 people. Now, if you look over to our left across the street, the last building in that first stretch there, the one with the white columns on the porch, that is 12 West Oglethorpe. Now, 12 West Oglethorpe is owned by a man named Dr. Henry Brown. As I mentioned earlier on in the tour, we had 2 yellow fever epidemics in the city, one in 1814, one in 1820, and each of them killed 2/3 of the population of Savannah. Most of the citizens who weren't initially infected were fleeing the city, but he said as a doctor, it was his calling to stay and help the sick citizens of Savannah. So he insisted on staying in the house, even though his wife and son begged him to leave. You know, by the end of that year, both his wife and son had died of yellow fever, so in remorse over their deaths and feeling like it was his fault, he bricked himself up in the residence where he starved to death and never ended up leaving again. That was also the only building on one of my tours anyone has ever successfully photographed a ghost. I led a lady out of the tour one night, and she took a picture through the doorway. And behind the right side window, you can clearly see the man staring out at her. She can also see the wall right through him. Now, this couldn't have been a double exposure. It only happens on film. It was taken with a digital camera. Could have been photoshopped or altered because I watched her take it and saw it in the camera about a minute and a half later. As an extra added bonus on the tour, if you'll give me an email address after our ride, I'll be more than happy to send you a copy of that picture. Now, a slightly lighter note here in front of us where you see the Chippewa Square sign right in the middle of that flower bed. There was once a bench where a man by the name of Forrest Gump sat and told his life story over a box of chocolate.
Oh, yeah.
That is where they filmed the bus stop scene from the movie Forrest Gump.
Hey, cool.
Now, if you look over Forrest's left shoulder in the film, you can see Oglethorpe's Monument there in the center of Chippewa Square. Why Oglethorpe's Monument is in Chippewa Square, not Oglethorpe Square, has always been a mystery to me. It was designed by a team named French and Bacon, who would later go on to design the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. Over to our right, coming up on the side of the second building, we see an interesting feature of Savannah architecture visible throughout the city. It's that double staircase going up to one doorway. Now, this was done, and you'll see it throughout the city, in the early days of Savannah, because at that time there was a law stating if an unmarried man saw an unmarried woman's ankles, he had to marry her. If she was already married, this man was legally bound to duel her husband for her. So they would take separate sides of the staircase to keep the accidental ankle viewing, and therefore all the matrimonial mayhem to a minimum. Now in the far left corner of the square through the trees, you'll see a large lit-up marquee. That is the historic Savannah Theater. Now the Savannah Theater was built back in 1818, making that America's oldest functioning theater. It was said to be haunted by the spirits of 3 women, who for 20 years from the 1880s till the early 1900s, auditioned for every single show which was ever held in that theater, and none of them ever managed to get a role. so they still wander around the backstage areas, messing with actors' belongings and attempting to delay showtimes any way they possibly can.
Oh, wow.
It was in that theater back in 1851 that a young actor by the name of John Wilkes Booth performed in William Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. He played the part of Brutus, the man who assassinated Julius Caesar, and apparently had some trouble getting out of character, since the same man would go on a few years later in another theater in real life to assassinate President Abraham Lincoln. Now, does anybody back there or up here by any chance know the difference between a ghost and a poltergeist?
Poltergeists are the ones that kind of go a little crazy, right? They get trapped in one place and they kind of go a little nuts?
Fairly close. Now, there are two main differences are, number one, a ghost was at one time alive, a poltergeist has always been a spirit, and number two, a ghost inhabits a place, while a poltergeist inhabits a body of somebody that are living or dead. Now, the reason I mention that is because this square to our left during a CNN report about 7 years ago was nicknamed Poltergeist Square, and the nickname has kind of stuck since then.
Right.
Now, the statue in the center is a monument to Sergeant William Jasper, who's one of our Revolutionary War heroes, who died during the Siege of Savannah, the second bloodiest battle of the Revolutionary War. Now, according to legend, he had a poltergeist which followed him to his various residences here in Savannah, causing quite a bit of a disturbance. Well, that spirit is said to make an appearance in the center of the square these days from time to time, as that is now Jasper's residence. He is buried underneath his monument. There are actually only two monuments here in Savannah built to a specific person which do not contain the body of the man they were built to honor. Well, I'll point those out as we get to them. Now, coming up over here to our left, this large red brick building was at one time the Reserve Guards Armory, now it's owned by the Savannah College of Art and Design, and the two cannons you see hanging by the doorway were actually used during the Revolutionary War. Now, about 3 years ago, one of the dumbest criminals I've ever heard of in my life tried to steal one of those cannons. Not real sure what he planned on doing with it, but he put a chain around it and put the other end to the back of his truck. Well, when he drove away, instead of tearing that cannon free and taking it with him, he left his bumper, complete with his license plate, chained to the door of Savannah College of Art and Design's admissions office, making it rather easy to identify and apprehend. Right here in front of us is the monument to Count Casimir Pulaski. That's the man Fort Pulaski is named after. He was a Polish count who fought on the side of the colonies during the Revolutionary War. Back in the early 1950s, there was a 7-year-old boy who was killed in the center of this square by falling masonry from the top of the monument. During the ensuing lawsuit, the city had to put that cast iron fence around that monument to keep people from being getting close enough for this to ever happen again. Now, these days, people who walk through there with very young children often report their kids will tell them there's a boy on the other side of the fence that wants to know if I can come in and play. Well, when the parents look back, they never see this little boy. And they never will, as it is the general belief that he will only show himself to the other children. Have any of you back there ever read the book or seen the movie Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil?
Yes.
All right, well, if you have read the book, congratulations. If you saw the movie, my deepest condolences. Coming up here on our right, this is the Mercer House. Those in the room to the left of the white columns on the porch that Jim Williams allegedly shot and killed Danny Hansford, laying out the basis for that best-selling novel. It was also in that room that he suffered the heart attack, which later led to his death, many calling this Hansford's revenge. Many of the scenes in that movie were filmed there, as were scenes from the Academy Award-winning film Glory, and scenes from the beloved cinematic classic Return of Swamp Thing. Now, a personal favorite story about this place has nothing to do with the book or the movie, as it involves the parties Jim is very famous for throwing here. A lot of the times during his parties, the children of the partygoers would play up on the rooftop. Well, one fateful day, one of these boys chased a pigeon too close to the edge and fell off the side of the building. He fell onto the spiked cast iron fence and drove one of those points into his skull and broke it off. We still have down the left side of the building to see where that fence is missing that point. Jim, being quite a sick little puppy, followed that boy's ambulance to the morgue, and during the autopsy when the coroner took that point out of the boy's head, Jim gave him $50 for it and kept it as a souvenir. If any of you are in the market for real estate here in Savannah, Jim's sister now owns that building, and she is trying to sell it, and she recently reduced the asking price from $8.9 to $7.6 million. Huh. Don't snap it up while it's cheap, folks. Now, there in front of us is beautiful Forsyth Park, set up in 1841. And in 1848, they put that fountain there in the center. They made two of those fountains at that time, that one carved from white marble, and exact twin carved from the same pattern in black marble, which currently resides in a park in Paris, France. Crisscrossing underneath Forsyth Park and extending throughout the city of Savannah, there are 33 miles of underground tunnels and catacombs beneath the city. Now, these were used during the Revolutionary and Civil Wars to hide from the incoming soldiers and to shuttle supplies back and forth to the soldiers who were guarding the city. where they were also used during the late 1700s and early 1800s as smuggling routes by the pirates, back when they pretty much ran this city. And they were also used as escape routes by slaves escaping to the north during the latter days of the Civil War as part of the famed Underground Railroad. Many also became underground storage facilities and just a convenient way to traverse the city, as it does get quite sweltering hot on the surface here during the summer. And many of those catacombs were also used for various other, quite a bit more dubious purposes, which I'll get into just a little bit later. And coming up on our right, at the end of this next block, there'll be a large yellow building with a sign out front says this is the Forsyth Park Inn. Now, this was originally the home of a young girl by the name of Lottie, whose story was recently profiled on the Travel Channel. Well, Lottie lived there with her uncle. They were quite inseparable until her uncle began to romance a local woman. Now, this did not sit well with Lottie. She was quite the jealous little girl, so she decided to poison this woman's afternoon tea. Now, as this woman lay dying, Lottie was called into the room by her uncle, who explained that he was not, in fact, her uncle. He was her father. And the woman she had just murdered was, in fact, her mother. They kept their identity secret all these years to keep her from being stigmatized by society as having been born out of wedlock. All right. Well, over here to our left, you look into the center of the park. That statue, which is currently undergoing some restoration, that scaffolding around it is not normally part of it, as a Confederate monument. The large earthen mound you see underneath that statue contains the bodies of 500 slain Confederate soldiers, stacked pyramid style and then buried, with that statue put on top about 30 years later. Over to our right, across that vacant lot, you'll see a large yellow building with green shutters. That's a double Victorian house built symmetrically around a dividing wall down the center of the building. It was built that way back in 1837 by a riverboat captain who said he feared his daughters would kill each other while he was away on a voyage. Well, unfortunately, this ended up being the truth, as in 1838, one of these girls came over to the other side of the building and smothered her sister in her sleep with a pillow. How many ghostly goings on have been reported there since then, such as cabinet and closet doors, which will open and close themselves, television and stereo equipment, which will turn itself on even when unplugged, and ghostly footsteps, which can be heard going up and down the staircases at all hours of the night. I got all those stories firsthand, but the building is now owned and lived in by a man by the name of Thor. And Thor is one of our other hearse tour drivers. Now, the area of town we're currently driving through is called the Victorian District. This is originally not considered part of the city. This is more of a suburb. And as you drive through here, you'll notice many of the old clapboard houses are painted bright, obnoxious pastel colors. This is a throwback to an old English tradition during the Victorian days, which stated that the evil spirits preferred to stick to dark areas, and that by painting your house these colors, you would scare those evil spirits away from your house. I can't say if that was ever successful or not, but these days, these bright colors do pretty successfully ward off potential buyers from the buildings. You also notice that many of the buildings here throughout Savannah that have shutters have been painted a bluish-green color. This is a tradition known as haint green, also called haint blue in some areas. You see this throughout many older southern cities such as St. Augustine, Charleston, and of course Savannah. Now, this tradition goes back to the Gullah people. They were brought here as slaves from the Caribbean. Back in the African slave trade, it was still illegal in this city. And haint was their word for ghost. You don't pay that guy. And this blue-green color was the color they used to paint their talismans for protection against the evil spirits. This belief eventually transferred over to the slaveholders, who decided that these haint green shutters, when closed, would not allow an evil spirit to enter or exit through that window. Now, the Gullah people were also responsible for bringing voodoo here to Savannah, where it spread like wildfire throughout the slave population, due to many similarities to the African tribal religion. Actually, in the first U.S. Census after the Civil War, once all the slaves had been freed and were counted for the first time, voodoo was listed as the number one most practiced religion in the city of Savannah. Over there to our right, that is Yamacraw Village. It was named for the Yamacraw Indians, originally inhabited this area. And back in 1883, on Halloween night, same night the Shelter Hospital was dedicated, that place burnt to the ground, leaving 138 people dead. One of the more predominant types of spirits sighted in Savannah over the years are the spirits of those said to either be burnt to a crisp or engulfed in flames. It's said that these are the spirits of those killed during the great fires of Savannah. We had three over the years, which leveled at least half of the city each time, and the Yamacraw Village is one of the areas where they are most often sighted. As we pass Yamacraw Village, we're also entering a district of historic Savannah, which the historians often refer to as the ghetto. Yes, welcome to the hood, folks. I guess they're as safely as possible. You guys trust me, right?
Yeah. Sure.
Wow, none of you sound very sure about that one. Moving to our left is the second oldest remaining cemetery here in Savannah. This is Laurel Grove Cemetery. Back in 1853, when they decided that Colonial Park Cemetery was full enough, they dedicated this as the city's official burial ground. Now, some of the notable graves in there include Juliet Gordon Lowe, founder of that cult I was speaking of earlier. There's also a man buried in there by the name of James Pierpont. He was the minister of music at a local Presbyterian church, and later went on to write a rather famous song, some of you may be familiar with, by the title of Jingle Bells.
Huh.
Another one of our famous ghostly Savannah residents, whose story involves this cemetery, Colonial Park Cemetery, and Hillcrest Abbey Cemetery, which is out off Wheaton Street, is the story of a man by the name of Rene.
Sorry.
By the time Rene was 15 years old, he stood 7 feet tall and weighed nearly 400 pounds.
Oh, wow.
He was a victim of giantism, as well as various other physical disformities, and severe mental retardation. Now, depending on which version of his story you believe, he was either orphaned or abandoned at a very early age. But either way, he used to call the cemeteries of Savannah his home, namely this one and Colonial Park Cemetery. And his favorite toys were the stray cats, which are pretty prevalent here in the city. And they used to find them strewn about the cemetery grounds in various states of dismemberment.
Uh-huh.
And when Rene was 18 years old, the bodies of 2 young girls were found in Colonial Park Cemetery. One of them had had her eyes and entrails removed.
Oh.
The other, they found only her torso and took extensive searching to locate the rest of her carcass. Now, the citizens of Savannah put quite a bit of pressure on the police department to apprehend the man who had committed this heinous act. So they decided to take the easy way out, and without a trial, they pinned the murders on Rene. Well, they tracked him to this cemetery, where they chased him down and subdued him, hogtied him, hitched him up behind an old horse and buggy, and drug him throughout the streets of Savannah. They drug him for about 3 miles over those cobblestones, until eventually they reached Hillcrest Plantation, which is now the grounds of Hillcrest Abbey Cemetery, where they hung him from one of the tall live oak trees. Now, legend states that he hung there for almost a day before he finally died, and newspaper accounts from that time tell us that they allowed his body to hang there for an additional 3 days. While the citizens of Savannah came and gawked at the executed freak, threw rotten fruits and vegetables, sticks and stones and other objects at his body. Now, the caretakers of our local cemeteries allowed his body to be interred there. They said that the remains of this unholy creature would desecrate their consecrated grounds. So when they cut him out of the tree, they tied the other end of that rope around an old millstone and just tossed him in the marsh out back behind the plantation for the gators to dispose of.
Sure.
A couple of years later, the man was arrested here in Savannah and ended up being convicted of the murders of 7 little girls. Now, it came out during the trial that these 2 girls found at Colonial Park Cemetery had been this man's victims, that Rene was innocent the entire time.
Oh, wow.
I'd say one of the more restless types of spirits you'll ever encounter is the spirit of a man who has been executed for a crime he did not commit. For this reason, Rene is still said to wander the cemeteries of Savannah, namely this one and Colonial Park Cemetery, as they were his homes during his lifetime. So if you see a large deformed freak wandering among the tombs, please let me know and get out of here as quick as humanly possible. Now, if you ever happen to be going through the cemeteries of Savannah alone any time without a guide, and you happen to encounter this creature, it's my recommendation you do not approach him, as my indication Rene is not a very friendly... Oh, my God, Rene! Oh, no, I'm sorry, that wasn't him.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, I got a little jumpy going here by the cemeteries tonight, folks.
You got airbags in this thing, bro?
And from the looks of things, a few of y'all get a little jumpy, too. Got a couple of wet wipes up here, if anyone needs them. Some of you may be familiar with certain aspects of the story of Rene, and you don't even realize it.
It's okay, man.
She was a little girl by the name of Mary. She was sent here by her family in England to live with a family here in Savannah for a couple years. And she was a sick, twisted, morbid little girl. Fell in love with the story of Rene and asked to be told the story every night as she went to bed.
Hi, Mom.
Now, eventually this girl would go back to England, taking the story with her, where she wed a poet by the name of Percy Shelley, and Mary Shelley went on to write the novel Frankenstein. The creature's large size and physical disformities, the hatred of the villagers, and the alleged child murders are aspects of the story of Frankenstein, which many historians believe may have been inspired by the tale of Rene. And Mary was quite a sick, twisted, morbid little girl. People sometimes tell me I'm a little bit sick, twisted, morbid for having a job driving a hearse, telling ghost stories, and scaring people for a living. I say sick, twisted, morbid. Oh, no. I know people who actually pay to sit in the back. On a shotgun, as the case may be. There's another interesting section of this cemetery, which unfortunately can't see from the road, it's near the back of the cemetery. This is called Babyland. A Babyland is 3 rows of 6 marked graves and 4 rows of 6 unmarked graves, which contained the bodies of infants killed during the yellow fever epidemics in 1814 and 1820.
Wow.
This is not the only Babyland here in Savannah. There's another one in Hillcrest Abbey Cemetery, which is where they hung Rene, which is much, much larger and contains almost 500 infants. Now, we used to be able to drive through Hillcrest Abbey Cemetery on this tour, until it recently came under new management. They decided they didn't want us there anymore. Actually got a police injunction to keep us out. But that was the site of my first ghostly encounter on the tour.
Wow.
I'll preface my story by saying that, according to paranormal investigators, there are two ways the ghosts will show themselves in pictures. One is called specters, or apparitions, is when they show up as the person, the animal, whatever they were during their lifetime, like the picture that was taken out of 12th Oglethorpe. The other is called orbs. Now, orbs are small circles of light, which will appear unexplainably in people's photographs and indicate the presence of ghostly energy. Now, this was my second night on the job. It was my first midnight tour and also my first private tour. And I had been hired by a group called the Big Bend Ghost Trackers. They're professional ghost hunters here from Florida. And they loaded up about $20,000 worth of equipment in the back of my hearse. Well, we headed out throughout the city. And as we were driving through Hillcrest Abbey Cemetery, I told them a story about Babyland, and they asked to get out and take a few pictures. And as they were wandering through Babyland, one woman pointed a digital night vision video camera at one of the other women and told her to start singing the song, Rockabye Baby. And as she was, I was watching this woman, and it didn't look like anything out of the ordinary was going on. I said, excuse me, ma'am, what was the point of that? Well, she gave me a knowing little grin, told me to come and look through the viewfinder of the camera. And when I did, what I saw was like a huge swarm of fireflies, a couple of hundred tiny orbs of light, and they were circling around this woman as she sang. I didn't believe it goes to this point, so I said, oh no, that's got to be a camera glitch. So she stopped singing. Well, so soon as she stopped singing, all those orbs of light immediately disappeared. They all reappeared as soon as she started singing again. And this freaked me out quite a bit. It was some time before I got out of this hearse in Babyland at night again. I'll swear upon whatever you want me to swear upon. My mother's grave, whatever, that story is 100% true. Saw that with my own two eyes just over a year ago. One of our other famous cemeteries here in Savannah, which unfortunately don't get to visit on the tour, but I highly recommend you do during your stay here, called Bonaventure Cemetery. It's located in a town called Thunderbolt, about 2 miles outside Savannah, in the direction of Tybee Island. If you've seen the movie Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, that's where they filmed the scenes of Jim meeting with Minerva, the voodoo lady. It's also the only cemetery I've ever seen in my life with picnic tables. Now, back in the early 1800s, it was still Bonaventure Plantation, and the family lived there. The Tattenhalls were very famous for the parties they used to throw, much like Jim Williams would be many, many years later. And during the Thanksgiving party in 1803, their plantation house caught fire. Well, these were true hardcore party animals. They weren't about to let this put a damper on their spirit. So they carried their tables and chairs outside and continued the party, only this time with a bonfire. They'd make toast to the house who's hosted so many of their parties, drink it down, and throw the empty champagne glass right back into the fire. They say if you ride down the Wilmington River behind the cemetery at night, sometimes you can see the flickering of this ghostly flame, and sometimes you'll hear the unexplained sounds of breaking glass. Now, some of the notable graves out there include Johnny Mercer. Dan Hansford's buried in Greenwich Cemetery right next door after Jim Williams shot him and actually bought him his headstone. That was awful decent of it. Now, the reason we can't drive through that cemetery or any cemeteries in Savannah on this tour is because that's where the Bird Girl statue, famous from the cover of Midnight and then the Garden of Good and Evil, originally stood. Well, shortly after the movie came out, a couple of people tried to steal the statue. So they moved it to the Telfair Hospital and began to close the cemetery at 5 p.m. daily for fear of future vandalism. All the cemeteries in Savannah soon followed suit, so I can blame the unsuccessful grave robbers for us not being able to visit the inside of the cemeteries on this tour. Now, I realize I've been hitting you with a lot of facts, figures, dates, and information here in the last few minutes. You're on vacation, I doubt you want to think that hard, so I'm going to take a momentary break here to let it all sink in. Let me get a drink of water. You guys feel free to talk amongst yourselves, ask me any questions you may have, or just take in the view. And I'll be back in just a moment.
What's he doing now?
Alright, intermission's over. So over here on our right, coming up this large white building is the old Telfair Hospital. Now, it was the first and only hospital in Georgia's history ever to have been financed by a woman, entirely staffed by women, and intended for the care of women only. The only way a male was treated in that place if he was born to his mother, and that she could stay as long as she needed, but he officially had 3 days to vacate the premises. None of you are lip readers. Over there across the street from that hospital, see a bright pink house, apparently haunted by the spectre of bad taste. That hospital is now known as the Telfair Arms Back when they were turning that into a retirement community, they were digging in the backyard where they intended to put a swimming pool when they uncovered what they at first thought to be a mass grave. But upon closer inspection, they realized there were no heads and no torsos in the hole. So they did some searching into the history of the Telfair Hospital and discovered that during its heyday in the mid to late 1800s, the hospital had been most famous for their amputations. And it must have been pretty good. A lot of people gave them a hand. Never did figure out how to get ahead, but they kept a leg up on the competition. They were doing all right. Hey, you can't say I didn't warn you the jokes got worse, okay? Coming up on our right, the large red brick buildings comprise the mansion on Forsyth Park, currently Savannah's only five-star hotel. These first two buildings are brand new constructions, however, they do sit on top of an old Yellow Fever graveyard. The one down here on the corner, however, is not new at all. That is now the restaurant for this fine hotel. I don't know if these people eating in there know this. This building was originally the Fox and Weeks Funeral Home. Longest running funeral home in Georgia's history, is open for 228 years. Turning funeral homes into restaurants and hotels seems to be a trend in this city. So I'll throw it out to you, ladies and gentlemen. The room in the basement, which currently houses the walk-in freezer, however, it originally had 30 cast iron hooks around the wall. The building developers weren't sure what these had been used for, until they spoke to one of the building restoration consultants, or a coroner at one point, who told them that in the days before embalming, they used to simply skewer the bodies on these hooks, slit the feet open, and let them drain.
Yeah.
Coming up here at the end of the alleyway, directly in front of us, that building is the old Candler Hospital.
Yeah.
That was the first permanent hospital in the state of Georgia. It was built all the way back in 1802. Been used during both of the yellow fever epidemics in 1814 and 1820. It's also used by both sides of the Civil War. Back in the early 1900s, it was converted from a hospital into an insane asylum and remained as a mental institution until 1971, when the federal government denied them continued funding, and they had no choice but to release all their colorful citizens right back into the streets. And many of them are driving hearses these days. Well, just behind the bushes you'll see to the left of the fire escape on the front of the building is the entrance to one of those underground tunnels and catacombs I was speaking of earlier.
Wow.
This particular one runs all the way underneath the parking lot, and almost that tree in the center of the parking lot, that's the old Candler Oak, believed to be about 270 years old. I was in that catacomb during the yellow fever epidemic in 1820. Now, the doctors in that hospital bricked up the bodies of 157 yellow fever victims to keep them from contaminating the live patients left in the hospital. Well, about 30 years ago, there was a team of anthropologists who came here to Savannah, and they were doing some research, which included opening up the catacombs in various sections of the city. And when they opened up that catacomb, they discovered some very interesting and rather disturbing things. They found names and dates, which had been scrawled on the walls on the inside of the catacomb in blood. They also found fingernails embedded in the bricks, as if someone had died clawing at the walls. They also found that many of the bodies had been partially devoured, that the bite marks were far too large to have been those of a rodent. Well, this led them to the theory that many of those 157 that had been bricked up down there back in 1820 had, in all actuality, inadvertently been buried alive. Coming up on the right side of the square is my personal favorite house on the tour. It's absolutely gorgeous and incredibly creepy, both of which are pluses in my book. I was in this building back in the early 1890s, and three young girls were brutally slaughtered. Their ages were 7, 10, and 14. Even though they were alone by their parents for the first time, as they believed that their 14-year-old was not old enough to babysit her sisters. Well, shortly after the parents left, the man went into that building and savagely stabbed these three girls to death. Oh. And the crimes report states that the girls were, for the main part, eviscerated, meaning most of their entrails had been removed. It also states the crime is so violent the blood nearly covered the 14-foot-high ceiling. Now, the interesting thing about these three murders, they're the final three in a string of 11 killings done here in the 1890s, in the style of Jack the Ripper. There are two theories about this. Number one, could have been a copycat killer. However, this theory is largely discredited, because news traveled very, very slowly back in those days. By that point, most citizens of Savannah didn't even know who Jack the Ripper was, much less were familiar enough with the intricacies of his methods to properly emulate it. Now, the second more popular theory, many historians say that after his last murder in England, Jack actually hopped a ship here to America in order to evade the police. Now, Savannah was the number three most popular American destination for ships leaving England at that time. It was the only one of the top three which suffered a rash of Jack the Ripper-style murders during that period. Therefore, many historians believe that after his last murder in Whitechapel, Jack very well may have ended up right here in this fair city, where he continued on with his ghastly pastime. Now, coming up on our right is the Hamilton Turner Inn. It was built by a man by the name of William Hamilton. He was a stockade runner during the days of the Civil War. During the early days of that war, the Union forces put up a stockade around the city in an attempt to starve this important port into submission. It nearly worked, because almost half the population of Savannah starved to death during that time. The other half were definitely not doing too well. So Mr. Hamilton would run that stockade with food and supplies for the citizens of Savannah. Now, he was not a humanitarian, however, as he would charge the citizens of Savannah up to 100 times the food's original price. This infuriated the townspeople here, especially after he used the money he made exploiting them to build that beautiful mansion. Now, there were quite a few assassination attempts made upon this man. And so he began to hire guards to stand on the porch and patrol the top of the building, guarding his life and fortune. However, these guards were routinely shot by the citizens of Savannah. Therefore, eventually no one would take the job anymore. So he took up the gun himself and began to patrol the top of his building, guarding his home until the elements got to him and he contracted pneumonia and died. Now, these days, people who work at the Hamilton Turner Inn, they've often told me that people will say, what a nice, come in and say what a nice touch the guy on the porch and up there on the top of the building are. Well, they don't hire anyone there to wander that building in period costume. It's believed that these are the spirits of those guards killed during the service of Mr. Hamilton. Now, one of the questions I am most often asked here on the tour is if there's one building you recommend us see inside of all here in Savannah, which would it be? I always recommend this place over here to our right. This is the Cathedral of St. John the Baptist. Now, it's impressive on the outside. It's far more impressive on the inside. I personally am the son of a Southern Baptist preacher, and therefore I have seen most of the beautiful churches in America at some point during my lifetime, and therefore it is now very, very difficult to impress me with the architecture of a church. That place managed to do it, however. Can't recommend highly enough to you that you tour it. Has huge Austrian stained glass windows, which reported back in 1897. It was the only church or cathedral built in the American Southeast during this time period to have those windows, as it was very, very difficult to import them all the way from Europe at that time by boat without breaking them. Also has 14 fine German wood carvings of the 14 stations of the cross, which reported in 1912 and currently sit around the perimeter of the sanctuary of that Gothic-style cathedral. Also features the second largest pipe organ in the state of Georgia. Wow. It's carved out of white oak and has 2,019 pipes, making it second in size only to the one in the Fox Theater in Atlanta. Now underneath the road, which we'll be driving on once we cross the street, actually the road we'll be driving on right about now, the road we're about to turn on and partially into the buildings to our left, is the largest mass grave in the state of Georgia. It contains charred bodies dragged from the rubble after the Great Fire in 1820. And I actually dug this information up at the city archives, because I didn't believe it when I first heard it. But the official city registry states that this grave contains exactly 666 bodies. Over to our right. That large grassy area was once known as the Fields of Honor, a.k.a. the Dueling Pad. You can handle your problems right, gentlemen. This is where you came to pick up your guns, take 20 paces, turn, and settle your differences. Now, to use this dueling pad, you had to have one of two things. Number one, you could have next of kin present, or number two, you could have $20 in your pocket. In the event that you lost your duel, either your family would take your body and had you interred as they saw fit, or they would dump you over that fence at the cemetery, and the caretaker would come along and find your body, take his $20 fee, and find you a new place to stay. I'm going to pause for a second until we get by the bus so you can hear me. Over to our right, on the other side of that fence, is Colonial Park Cemetery, the oldest cemetery here in Savannah. It was used from 1750 until 1853. Many of the city's founding fathers and the Revolutionary War veterans are buried there. It's also where they found those two little girls Renee was executed for supposedly murdering. I don't let the fence around the cemetery fool you. It was originally almost twice that size, and bodies actually extended underneath the sidewalk and into the street on three of the four sides of the cemetery. That's where William Sherman's troops camped. When Sherman's march to the sea ended here in Savannah, and the Union forces occupied the city near the end of the Civil War. Now, during those cold winter months, it's reported they would often dig up graves, burning their contents for warmth, and sometimes sleep in the holes to escape the biting wind. When they got bored, they would move people's headstones around and change their inscriptions, giving them joke names and making them die before they were ever born. Many of these stones were never returned to their proper grave sites. And actually, on the back wall of the cemetery, there's a spot where there's about 300 tombstones both, which they have no idea where these people actually lie. They're said to wander around the cemetery at night in search of their mortal remains. Uh-huh. One of the more historically significant graves in there is the tomb of James Habersham, Jr. and Sr. They're one of our predominant local families torn apart by the Revolutionary War. James Sr. was the royal governor of Savannah and therefore a British royalist. James Jr. was head of the Liberty Boys, which was the local chapter of the Revolutionary War movement. Actually, at the beginning of the war, when the colonists took control of the city from the British, James Jr. was the man given the responsibility of arresting his own father and removing him from power. That's how they made peace. They do lie in the same crypt these days. One of the more interesting tombs, which I found wandering throughout there, which was not altered by the soldiers, states that the woman who lies in that grave died while giving birth to her 22nd child.
Huh. Dear Lord.
I think there's a good chance that lady committed suicide, personally. Does anybody back there care to take a stab at the reason why? In the later days of that cemetery's use, the city board of Savannah put forth an edict stating that and all the new graves in Colonial Park Cemetery had to be put above ground. That's because the water table here in Savannah is so high, and that cemetery is in such close proximity to the original city well, that as broke down, they're having a problem with the embalming fluid, and for lack of a better term, various corpse juices seeping into the city's drinking water.
Ew.
Oh, well, I thought I could make an outstanding bottled water commercial out of that story, but no one's ever taken me up on it. Over there across the street on the right will be the beautiful Lucas Theater. The Lucas Theater was built all the way back in 1921. During that time, many of these places down here were huge movie houses, very popular during that time, such as Skaggs Theater over there on the right, and the Theater Marquee over on the left, which currently reads featuring sushi and Pan-Asian cuisine. Well, the Lucas, then in 1927, was the site of a drive-by shooting. So it was liquor being stored in the back of the theater by one of our local gangs during the days of Prohibition. They wanted the other local gangs didn't appreciate his favoritism being shown. So they decided to send a message to the owner and shoot up the front of his building. There was only one person killed during that shooting. It was an innocent young bystander who had been cut down as he left the movie. Looking up on the right, if you look on the wall between the red awning and the poster case, you'll see what appears to be three bullet holes. I was believed that those three marks were made by the three bullets which passed through that unfortunate young bystander. I have personally spoken to the current owner of the Lucas on several occasions, very nice guy, and he says that on their various restoration and renovation attempts, they have tried to sand down and paint over those bullet holes. However, they keep coming back through the fresh coats of paint. I can personally say I've seen that place repainted once during my time as a hearse driver, and that all of those marks are precisely where they were before the wall was sanded and painted. And currently rounding Reynolds Square, to the center of Reynolds Square, is a monument to John Wesley, who is the founder of the Methodist religion, and the man credited who founded the first Sunday school ever in the world right here in Savannah, Georgia. I mentioned earlier in the tour there are two monuments which do not contain any bodies. That's one of them. And the other one is, Oglethorpe, back in Chippewa Square. Both those men, before their deaths, returned to their native England, and they are buried there with the rest of their family. Now, coming up over here on our right, there's another one of the buildings here in Savannah which predates the founding of the United States. That is the old Pink House. That was the home of James Habersham Jr. and Sr. Now it's a fine dining establishment. So if you want the whole Habersham death experience, you can always go and see their crypt in Colonial Park Cemetery, then walk about three blocks and eat in the building where they both died. I love this city. But James Jr. still said to wander about this place. He was known as quite a ladies' man, a bit of a practical joker during his lifetime. And for his haunt is one of the more infamous, actually more humorous here in Savannah, is the ladies' restroom and the planter's tavern in the basement of the Pink House. Now, women have told me on the tour, and they've also told various books and documentaries over the years, that as they try and leave this restroom, they'll feel as if they're being pushed or pulled back in by an unseen force, which will then hold the door closed. Now, they couldn't actually get locked into this restroom, as there is no lock on the door, nor is there a proper doorknob. These mechanisms removing this phenomenon first started to be reported. Now, women have said they've been trapped in there for upwards of 2 hours at a time, and then the next woman who comes down will easily be able to open that door from the outside, which they couldn't budge from the inside near moments previous. It was believed to be the spirit of James Jr., so having himself a little bit of fun at the expense of the ladies of Savannah. Now, currently rounding Johnson Square, this is the first square ever laid out here in Savannah, Georgia, and contains a monument to General Nathaniel Greene, second in command of the Colonial Army behind George Washington. This is also the city's other original execution square. As I mentioned, Red Square was where the beheadings took place. Therefore, this is where they had the hangings, as you can see from these huge live oak trees. It was perfect for that purpose. During this area's use as a hanging area, almost 2,000 bodies dangled from those trees, with those 10 little piggies just a little too high off the ground to ever make it to market again. However, you will notice something that doesn't dangle from any of the trees in that square.
Spanish moss.
Very good. There's no Spanish moss anywhere in Johnson Square. I have two stories about this. Number one, is a very, very old belief, which actually comes from an old Welsh folk tale, which states that Spanish moss refuses to grow anywhere where innocent blood has been shed. The other one I've heard is that the spirits of those executed there come back to tear it down to remind them of how they died, dangling from the old live oak trees. Both of these are very interesting. There are two, and only two, spirits are in Savannah where Spanish moss absolutely refuses to grow. They're that one and Warren Square, which, if you remember, is the other execution square where those two slaves were beheaded. We're currently back here on Bay Street, aka the old Indian burial ground, headed back to the historic Doubletree Hotel, built all the way back circa 2180. So this is going to end our ride this evening. Hope everybody had a good time. If you found your ride entertaining and informative, or if I just won you over with my boyish charm and rugged good looks, your duties are accepted and greatly appreciated, and primarily survive on tips. Now, if you gave your credit card number over the phone to hold the reservation, I was unable to hold the reservation. It has not been charged. So you can still give me cash or you can let me see the credit card, and I'll run it, get us all settled up for whatever it is we need to do. Just keep in mind, it does need to be a Visa or MasterCard. Because here at Hearst Tours, we will take you on top of about 30,000 dead bodies, but we won't take American Express. Once again, my name is Nathan. I'd like to thank you all for riding Hearst Tours this evening. I hope you all enjoy the rest of your stay here in beautiful, historic Savannah, Georgia.
We're gonna get it right. Yeah. All right. Come here, bud. Come here, big guy. Come on, come on. Wasn't so bad, was it? Come here. I think we ought to be the first ones out so we can let other people get out this way. Hold up, bud. Hold up, hold up. Hold up, big guy. Hold up, buddy. Come on.
14.
Relax. Okay. Alright. Go ahead and get out so we can let some other people get out back here and we're not in the way. Come on. Come on, get. Come on.
You need a hammer?
Nah, got it. Whoa. Don't hang yourself, bud. Be the next thing on the tour if you do that.
Good story.
Good job, man.
Thanks. Appreciate that.
Thanks. Yeah. Come here.
Much nicer than the place a lot of people got dropped off the back
of the I wonder why.
Thank you.
Just said to go and find a ledge book. $14 a piece.
Here's mine.
Thank you.
Can you? Sit. Come on. Sit down. Sit.
Hold on just a second.
Rest. 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 Sit there. Okay? Rest. Come
on. Relax, bud. Step a little to the right, and there's the breath.
Okay. Sit down, bud. Sit. 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 Can you?
Yeah.
All right.
You get to
I'm going to do that. Okay. If he does change.
I'm sure he will.
Okay. I'm sure he will.
You want to give him a tip?
Maybe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Way too much shade.
Stop.
Four. Excuse me. Thank you.
Turn, bud. Come on.
I'm right here, Kim. If you want.
Rest.
Yeah, I got more change.
Hey.
Alright, we got two more.
Come on, let's go. Alright, my next.
Alright. And you're for the...
I'm for two, me and her, right. And I'm going to ask for some change, and I want you to go ahead and get
five. Oh, thank
you. From there.
Two's 12, we change to 7.
Okay. 2 1s and a 5.
Yeah.
Okay. Just tell which one's a 5.
That's the 5.
Alright.
And those are the 2 1s.
Alright, man. Thanks.
No problem. You folks have a very, very nice evening.
Alright, man. You too.
Thank you.
Alright, where are we going, guys?
What do y'all want to do?
Hold up, bud.
What did y'all want? How about one pick up the candy shop? I don't want to do much.
You don't want to
do much?
Are you tired, baby?